Hey everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Risky Biz Soapbox Podcast. My name's Patrick Gray. Now, this is obviously not the regular weekly show that we do here at Risky.biz. This is something different. Up to 10 times a year, we get a vendor to do one of these wholly sponsored podcasts to talk turkey. Now, I don't know how many InfoSec product websites you've been on lately, but when I visit most of them, I can barely decipher what some of these companies do. These podcasts are a way for these vendors to really explain in detail what the problems they're trying to solve are and how they're trying to solve them. And I got to say, I think this particular edition of Soapbox is really, really interesting. The sponsor this time is Attack IQ, which is a company based out of San Diego that makes attack simulation software. Now, your immediate reaction might be attack simulation? Like, that sounds a bit fancy. How the hell is that useful? But as you'll hear, it bloody well is. There are countless CISOs listening to this podcast who've shoveled an awful lot of money at security controls in their organizations. Whether that's endpoint or AV, fancy network kit that's supposed to detect exfiltration over covert channels, most organizations have no way to know if their expensive kit is actually doing what it's supposed to do. Until, of course, they get breached, right? Then they tend to know where the failings are. And then, of course, there is much wailing and gnashing of teeth. So the idea behind attack simulation platforms like Attack IQ is actually pretty simple. You can load a lightweight agent onto your corporate system. The agent connects via a TLS validated connection back to them or to an on-premise thing that you've set up, and it downloads attack scenarios, basically Python scripts that can simulate attacker behavior. And before you freak out, yes, you can offline sign those scenarios so attackers can't own you through your simulation software. So yeah, these attack scripts, they might get some endpoints to start nmapping internal systems to simulate that behavior. They might start changing some registry keys or stimulate a bunch of disk activity that looks like an encryption process. So you're sort of simulating ransomware there. It might start sending off a bunch of dummy data via a DNS exfil technique. Did your endpoint solution catch the funny registry stuff? Did your network controls catch the simulated exfil? Now imagine that you have 1,000 pre-scripted attack simulations with all sorts of different combinations and permutations of attacker behaviors. How many of them do you actually need to run through before you can spot the weak points in your defenses? This is what attack simulation is all about. It's about getting the stuff that you already have correctly configured and working properly. It is the way to test and validate your security controls. And the nice thing is it's automated and you can do it continuously. Attack IQ's co-founder and chief executive, Stefan Chenette, he joined me to talk about attack simulation and what it's good for. Here he is.
You know, so I've been in security a little bit more than 20 years, you know, and 15 years ago I was working at a defense contractor, and we talked about attack simulation, but not the same way as Attack IQ is looking at continuous security validation, attack simulation. So it's the ability to automate the concerns that you have, the threats that you hear about every day against your security controls. Taking those same threats and then mimicking them throughout the devices, the host-based security controls and network-based security controls, instrumenting everything, stress testing the network, and then being able to determine detection, prevention capabilities.
See, the interesting thing I find is, like, before you and I had some conversations prior to this interview, I didn't really understand, like, what it is you did, right? Because I thought it must be this really sort of complicated, bizarre thing. But it's really, you know, it's actually a fairly simple thing. I mean, essentially what we're talking about is you have agents that can run at various levels of privilege on, you know, an enterprise's systems, and then they sort of act as the attacker for you, right? So you might say, what if someone owned this workstation and popped PrivEsc on it? Like, what would happen then? What if they couldn't pop, you know, pop to system level access? What could they do? And then you can sort of have templates and scripted attack scenarios, right? Like, is that a decent way of explaining it?
Yeah. I mean, it's those, exactly. I mean, the scenario. And instead of just having a tabletop exercise where everyone has a role and responsibility, and you kind of go around and you talk to the head of the SOC, the CISO, the CIO, and say, well, what if this happened? And it's a discussion. Well, is that what's going to happen inside the organization against the controls, against the technologies? Unless you start testing, unless you actually start running these scenarios on the live production network, you don't know the real answer.
So like in a typical deployment, do you actually grab these agents and put them absolutely everywhere? Or is it more about getting like a statistically significant sample size of machines that have this agent on them?
Yeah, so typically there's a conversation that we have with our customers, which is to look at, you know, if you have 5,000 devices, 100,000 devices on your network, no matter where they are in the cloud, traditional corporate networks, roaming laptops, if you have our software on those laptops, then you can validate that the security controls are working. If you do a statistical sample set, 50%, 80% of your network, well, then there's still 20% that you don't have the visibility. You don't know the answer. Is the security controls working effectively, if at all? And so in most of those conversations, we start with a statistical sample set, but with the notion that you want to aim for 100% visibility, 100% that you're on a minute per minute, hour per hour, day per day basis, validating every security control you assume to be working.
When you set up a customer, what's the first scenario they typically want to run? What's the one that gives them the jaw dropper moment?
So the jaw drop is, the most standard type of attack in a Windows environment, which is use of Mimikatz. Everyone knows that, you know, it's used in the majority of attacks. And the question is, well, if you look at any given network segment from point of sale systems or accounting, anything that actually matters from a business perspective, if you were trying to dump a bunch of your credentials, is anything going to be found that matters and allows an attacker to move laterally to another part of the network segment and do something that's critical, that's going to hurt your business from a perspective? And in so many cases, that attack is successful. And so it's something that can be done in seconds. From our perspective, it's looking at it from two realms, right? One is you got a particular concern, whether that's ransomware or credential theft or exfiltration of data, and you don't know if you have a security control in place. You don't know if that technology, whether it be like an endpoint detection product, can catch it, or if your network security control can catch it, and you want to find out. On the other end, you've bought all of these security controls, whether it be host-based or network-based, and you think that they do X, Y, and Z, and you want to find out. So one is like the known knowns, and the other is the unknowns. And either way, you want answers so you can start making decisions.
I really like this idea of being able to run a sophisticated scenario, like a more scripted, subtle thing than just, running Mimikatz on a popped system. I like this idea that you can run a more sophisticated scenario and see if it bubbles up into your SIEM console in a meaningful way, right? Because it is, I can't think of, aside from like a manual pen test, which is going to be very expensive, I can't really think of a better way to test your ability to actually respond to incidents. I'm guessing that's probably a pretty strong desire of the people who buy the software.
Yeah, I mean, if you were just to hire a pen test firm and they come in with a bunch of tools to kind of mimic the most common techniques that an attacker would deploy, you're going to have one perspective, which did that tool work? Did that technique work? But then if you have 75, 100 different tools, you can't find out in seconds, well, what detected, what prevented? So you can start understanding your security stack and your detection capabilities.
Yeah, and I'm guessing too, like you commission a red team, you go through the expense of that exercise, and you're usually going to find like a couple of paths that the attackers took, right? Whereas this makes testing those paths to, juicy data, it's more pointy clicky, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's looking at it from an exhaustive perspective. You look at it a few different ways. You want to, especially even a red team exercise, first you want to start off extremely quiet, right? Doing sophisticated techniques that most likely won't get detected. And then you start turning the knob to try to become noisier, more aggressive, almost like the dash T flag in Nmap, right? You're going to start doing things that are a little bit more obvious and going, well, something at some point should catch it. With an attack simulation platform, something that continuously, repeatedly can run these attack scenarios, be it one simple tactic or multi-stage, multiple scenarios over multiple machines, you're going to start to understand your baseline. Where and when can you start to catch things? At what level of maturity right now is the resiliency of your security program and capabilities.
So it's interesting. I mean, I know you've licensed Nmap, right, for use in this technology so that you can do things like launch various types of port scans from any device that has your agent on it. Is that about right?
Yeah. No, I mean, from the Attack IQ perspective, in being an open platform, you know, once you've actually deployed out the test points, which are the agents throughout the enterprise network, you know, roaming laptops, cloud-based corporate networks, it's all about the scenarios. And the scenarios can be written by any of our customers. They're written today by Attack IQ and our community. But in those scenarios can be, you know, use of your Nmap end scripts. And so we've licensed the Nmap engine, so that you can make use of all of the end scripts and the work that's already been done by your security org.
What about stuff like Metasploit? Can you start throwing, you know, Metasploit attempts at servers from workstations using your agent?
Yeah, for the most part, most of the scenarios that we're running deal less with exploitation. It's, you know, an argument's sake whether, you know, obviously injection into memory and dumping credentials is exploitation. In many cases, it is. But yeah, you could wrap the meta interpreter inside one of the scenarios and start running, you know, Metasploit inside of a scenario and just use our agent as the initial foothold.
I mean, I wanted to draw that out of you because what I find most intriguing about this is because you've got an agent running on these systems that can either, you know, run with the same privilege as the user, right, which is useful for certain types of attack scenarios. You can also get this thing to, like, just, you know, pop up to system level privilege, which means that you can actually simulate successful zero-day attacks on specific systems in your organization and then study the flow-on effects. So you can say, hey, say we've got an attacker in here who's got zero-day in this service. What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, the perspective of Attack IQ, and hopefully this is true of most of the audience, is assume breach, right? We have this assumption that you're installing our agent on a machine that you assume to be compromised, because at one point or another it will be. Now, what's going to happen? So you can start running a number of different scenarios, assuming that there was a zero day and that someone got access to that machine, and you can start running all these levels of assumptions, you know, assumption 1, 2, and 3, or 2, 3, and 4 at any given level.
So can you actually break it down like the automation per service? So can you say, okay, what if there's an SMB OD? What's that going to look like? Or you sort of have to decide which of those machines are going to get popped by this imaginary OD?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in a typical pen test, when you're even, you know, employing, you know, 5-10 person team, let alone one person, you're talking about a sample set that's much smaller in terms of like what's possible in the organization. When we looking at your assessing the resilience of your entire security program, the types of organizations we work today, you know, have 500,000 devices, and we want them to easily be able to answer a question about 500,000 devices. You know, as quickly as 5 devices. And so you can run scenarios on all of them in seconds and then get back answers. And so, you know, that scenario that could have just taken place on that device started on, you know, 5,000 devices and get quickly the perspective and the visibility. Well, what's possible?
How sort of fuzzy can you get with it, right? So if you say, I'm sort of curious about the smarts in the platform here, right? So if you say, oh, okay, there's a bug in SMB, like does your platform know which of the hosts with your software on it actually have SMB? And can it then, you know, semi-automate the scenarios? Or is it more like you have to say, oh, okay, all of these workstations have it. Yeah, so you sort of have to input that data yourself.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a combination. So, you know, to get started, you deploy all these test points, these agents, and the agents then identify themselves. So I'm a, you know, OSX, I'm running Sierra, you know, and I'm in this IP range, and here's the software that potentially is installed on my laptop. And as soon as it identifies itself, it'll self-identify in running certain scenarios. So it might be that it's more vulnerable, or these are the core weak points. And as soon as it identifies itself, the right scenarios will be mapped to that device and start running.
So about these scenarios, I'm imagining that they're mostly just like scripted, right? So you can write your own?
Yeah. I mean, the from day one, you know, 3.5-4 years ago when Attack IQ started, it's always been an open platform. You can write scenarios. They're written in Python. We have a community that's actually sharing scenarios, discussing ideas for scenarios. Yeah, you can write your own.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that there's a whole bunch sort of pre-baked in. Like, how much customization do you need to do to get some of these like pre-canned scenarios working with your setup?
So today, by default, you have about 1,000 scenarios that are accessible. And every single one of those scenarios you can fork and actually improve or customize all the utilities, you know, anything having to do with exfiltration, encryption, you know, Windows registry keys, those are all made available. So you download a scenario wizard, it'll create the basic skeleton of a scenario. And if anything else, that's the hello world of scenarios. And you can upload it and it works. It makes a simple HTTP connection. And then after that, it's a coding exercise.
So this is like a feedback loop, right? So you run the scenarios and then, you know, the customer will then take that knowledge and use it to maybe lock down those various attack paths and whatever. Have you actually started to find that some customers are converging on various approaches or a handful of approaches that seem particularly effective? Like, how much have we learned about which controls are most effective because we've got this, you know, this ability to quickly simulate like all sorts of different attacks?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Attack IQ so far has worked with a lot of forward-looking organizations, you know, and that by that sheer nature, we don't get to see so far the plethora of different organizations at every single level. So the forward-looking organizations, they're looking into things like orchestration. You know, most of them have some form or another of an EDR type solution. You know, some SIM either that they've customized and built themselves, or that they've purchased. So we do see a lot of similar type solutions. It's not the exact same vendor, but a lot of the same solutions.
So I guess they're using this as a way of tuning it into what matters and what doesn't. And I guess that's going to vary between networks.
Yeah, not even only tuning it. I mean, from day one, you look at, you know, the cost of choosing the right solution, you know, whether that that's Cylance or CrowdStrike or SentinelOne or Endgame or a number of different, you know, or Carbon Black or a number of EDR type solutions, you know, there's a right solution for that organization, right? There's not one particular vendor for everyone. And so when you look at making the right decision, what capabilities are you looking for? And if you know that strategically, then you can start running the right scenarios that will help you to match the capabilities in the EDR solution you're looking for. Once you purchase a solution and you deploy it, how do you know that you've deployed it correctly, effectively? And then once you've done that, how do you continuously monitor that it's as effective, you know, year one as it was day zero, you know? And so that's something that's a continuous loop, which is the direction I think that security is going in.
So you spoke about forward-leaning organizations, and it doesn't surprise me given that, you know, typical enterprise is still running around trying to figure out how to not run a, you know, flat network with a bug-riddled Oracle box sitting in the middle of their LAN. So, you know, I get that it's going to be more popular in higher security environments, banks, governments, that sort of stuff. And that sort of begs the question, like, can you get a little bit more specific about the types of organizations that are actually investing in this type of technology?
Yeah, I mean, forward-leaning organizations are looking at Attack IQ because they're looking at security strategically, which is where you want to get your organization, right? If you're only reactionary based off a compromise and then making a decision because of, you know, the board's forcing you to make a decision next week and you buy whatever is the best in class anything, was that the right decision strategically in the long run for your org? And if you're looking at security strategically, that's forward-leaning orgs, right? And so we have had a lot of success working with those organizations, of course, you know, financial and actually, funny enough, more and more healthcare. But as the, you know, Attack IQ offering has been not only for the very mature organizations, what we're trying to do as well as work with mid-market, you know, organizations that are buying some of the first security solutions, their first firewall, their first DLP, and then saying, well, you know, you have less money to spend. That decision matters more in the long run than, say, an organization that can take more risk and, you know, they don't want to make the wrong decision, but they can afford to. And so the smaller organizations are also looking at Attack IQ to be that validation platform that's helping them to make the right decisions early on so it doesn't cost them more in the long run.
It's funny you mentioned DLP because we spoke about that earlier before we were recording, which is, I think the way you described it is, you know, you don't want to just see if that box can get around DLP. You want to see if Bob from accounting can get around DLP. there are a lot of organizations that run DLP for compliance reasons, and it's always been my feeling that it doesn't really deliver the value it promised when it was first sort of hyped up at that RSA conference, you know, many, many years ago. But I'm guessing that if you actually have a way to test and validate, it almost might start to look useful, right? So, you know, I'm just wondering to what degree that attack simulation can take an otherwise semi-useless technology and actually make it good.
I mean, DLP, you know, and I've worked previously at a vendor that that sold a DLP solution. You know, there's a lot of hype as far as what it can do, and in many cases, it can't do some of the necessary capabilities. Obviously, you know, some organizations buy DLP from a compliance; they have to have it in place.
Yeah,
and then you know, you buy it because it's going to make you more secure in the long run. As you know, particular you know, employees exfiltrating data, maybe not even because it's from a malicious perspective, just breaking policy, right? Sending it something to their Gmail because it's just easier. Regardless of the reason, you had all these assumptions. Why did you buy that DLP product? What can it do for you? And a lot of the organizations that we're working with today say, well, you know, the vendor sold us this DLP solution. We thought it could do X, Y, and Z. Ends up it can't. We want to know either way so we can accept the risk that we at least know that we're accepting. Otherwise, it's just what we've been told.
But yeah, I mean, like using your agents, right? Because they can assume different levels of privilege and, you know, they can be different users. You can really get that granular, can't you? To say, well, can this user perform this action?
Yeah, I mean, attack simulation is not just about running a scenario from machine A to machine B and seeing what's possible. We're also talking about, you know, if you're talking about a DLP solution, you say, well, can I move data from this network, you know, and gym and accounting to this other network segment? And so it doesn't matter about the systems in play here. It might matter about what data and what user is moving that data. And so from our perspective, our platform can not only mimic the action, but the action by, you know, from what user. So you can actually mimic Jim, even though, you know, Jim's not going to be bothered. He can go about his day-to-day business, but we can actually mimic data being moved by Jim and then making sure that that DLP solution is looking at it from a per-user perspective.
I'm guessing by now you've run an awful lot of scenarios for an awful lot of clients. And, you know, given that you're a relatively early stage company, 3-4 years, right? You would have worked with customers in rolling this stuff out. So I'm guessing you kind of know where the bodies are buried when it comes to a lot of the technology that enterprises are depending on now for security. Which approaches to network defense do you think, you know, what are the best things you can do for your network to defeat all of these attack scenarios that you've run? I'm guessing it's going to come down to the embarrassingly simple stuff like, you know, patch your stuff and use two-factor auth.
Yeah, you know, in many, many, many cases, it's actually misconfigurations of the security solutions that they already have in place. So most of the orgs we worked with have a lot of the basics in place. They have a firewall, both app and network level. They've put in place a lot of the network segmentation basics that they should have in place. You know, many of them have invested in endpoint solutions, the very common basic security tooling, you know, and controls in place. And it comes down to the fact that it's been misconfigured. And it's not necessarily their fault. It just sometimes in the products themselves, the defaults were not configured correctly, a ransomware checkbox or some change that happened based off something temporary that was needed and then not turned back on. Forget about any security technology you'll buy of what you have already in place, that you've misconfigured it. No one's realizing it. No one's noticing it. And you actually haven't tested it.
So how would a misconfiguration sort of manifest itself from an attack simulation point of view? How are you going to identify that? What sorts of actions do you need to orchestrate to get that to show up?
Yeah, I mean, first it's just purely the configuration, right? So a lot of the organizations we work with today and we talk to them, and they're in some cases spending up to 30% back to that same organization that they bought the technology for to optimize it, right?
So seems like a smart business model for the vendor to me, you know?
And so, you know, partially, that's one of the things that we identify very quickly, right? So you have all these capabilities and assumptions of what, you know, your endpoint solution, your DLP should be doing. And those same enterprise customers are paying back to the vendors to optimize it so it actually does what it says it's supposed to be doing. And realizing that we can actually help in that regard.
So you give them more of a laundry list of where the actual blind spots are and whatnot, and where a control is failing that should be actually implemented by product X.
Yeah, exactly. And then so there's the blind spot aspect, and that's viewed as far as the gaps. But there's also this notion that we're helping a lot of the orgs go, well, here's where we were 6 months ago. Here's a CISO or a head of a SOC that says, well, here's where we were 6 months ago. We did all this work. How can we actually show that we minimized risk or our security program is any better than what it was 6 months ago? You know, because we're all about data and metrics and visibility. And so providing that, given X number of scenarios that you failed on 6 months ago and what that means to your business and what that threat was, what was the impact, and now 6 months later, how you've improved that. That's huge, right? That starts to bring in discussions about objective decision-making, discussions that aren't just about, you know, this is a threat. No, this is a threat. And discussions back and forth that are very subjective. This is about objective decision-making. When it comes down to configurations, well, that happens naturally, right? They always kind of say, you know, controls degrade over time. It's naturally going to happen in a network environment that's even slightly complex, that's having, you know, devices come in and out of it, laptops, desktop, mobile phones, that there's going to be configuration changes on the network and in the devices, especially where a lot of organizations are allowing their users to have admin access. As their security and IT team grows, the network devices that need to change, this is just natural. And when something gets misconfigured, as it naturally is going to, you just need to know and need to react and then fix it so that you don't just have this huge gap that no one is able to take action on.
Now, look, one of the biggest concerns for, you know, the modern enterprise is going to be ransomware. Have you put much thought into how to game out a sort of simulated ransomware attack on an organization?
So I think I feel like most, security professionals out there, whether it be WannaCry or anything else that's out there, there's going to be something else coming up next. And so, you know, when WannaCry came out, I think it took us about 24 hours to push out a number of different scenarios. And it had less to do with the exploitation portion and more to do with what happens when WannaCry infects the machine and is able to, take advantage of something that's going to have an impact on your business, whatever that might be. So ransomware has been huge for the last few years, and we've got over 300 different techniques and scenarios that are related to ransomware and all the techniques, all the patterns, because that's what we're noticing. Regardless of whatever is coming out, we see patterns left and right of us.
So do you get your agent to like simulate like a lot of disk activity, encrypting a file sort of thing to see if the endpoint security stuff catches it? Like, is that kind of the approach, or what is the approach?
Yeah, so the agent's just the foothold. That's the facilitator. It sits there, you know, in almost like a hybrid passive mode until a scenario is sent to it. And the scenario is really all the intelligence that's mimicking exactly what you're talking about, Patrick. The disk behavior, the network behavior, the registry behavior. And then at the same time, we're hooked into all the security technologies and processes that are able to determine, well, what detected it, what prevented it. And then you get back really the signal generation and then visibility into every single security control that you have, technologies, people, processes that we're able to react to it. And then say, well, where were the gaps? What did we miss? What do we assume was going to catch that type of activity? And that can happen within seconds.
Yeah. So when this thing started, encrypting a bunch of files or pretending to encrypt a bunch of files, changing registry values and whatever, why didn't our, $300 per seat EDR thing catch it, right? Which I think is what you'd call a fair question.
Yeah, and it might not just be one technology, right? So as soon as something starts generating some activity or some, PowerShell command starts getting executed, anything starts to happen, it might be one tool, it might be one product that was supposed to catch it, it might be 15. You're going to find redundancy too. But hopefully you're going to find that something detected it, something prevented it. So one way or another, you're either going to find a gap or you're going to be able to validate that a security technology and processes was able to correctly prevent or detect it. But you're able to test your whole detection chain.
Well, and this is where it gets interesting, right? Because you've spoken about like 1,000 scenarios. I'm guessing once you throw like the first couple hundred at it, you're going to have a pretty good idea about where your controls are good and where they're bad, right?
Yeah. So we look at it from the perspective of, you know, host-based controls and network-based controls. You know, we can install agents on bare-bone machines, you know, OSX, Linux, Windows, most major operating systems. And then you want to test all the security controls on the host-based controls. You want to test them as well in the network-based controls. And so, yeah, very quickly, you can start running the most popular, you know, 300 different techniques that deal with exfiltration over DNS, ICMP, you know, HTTP, HTTPS, and very, very quickly find out where something's misconfigured or where there's a gap or validate what's working.
No, man, it makes total sense. And you could also, like, you know, you could even get more and more sophisticated with your transport layer. Say you load something like Tor with Meek, you know, with Meek transport and see, well, what catches that, right? You should really not be allowing Tor to run on that endpoint in the first place. But if it does, do you know what I mean? Like, can we spot Meek on the wire? I mean, that's getting up to the high end. That's getting pretty hard from a network point of view, but you should catch it from a host point of view. So I get it.
Yeah, I mean, it deals with every single stage. You think of, no attack happens in one stage. So, you know, let's take Tor, for example, right? Installation of Tor, was that possible, right? And then we'll go check detection prevention controls. Tor starts to run. Now you look at actually process execution. Was that possible? And now you start to try to contact a .onion site, you know, or which .onion site? Was that possible? And then along the way, you're able to validate each stage of your defensive detection, prevention, control chain, right?
All right, Steph and Jeanette, thank you very much for joining us to have a bit of a chat about attack simulation. It's a really interesting idea. It is, by the looks of things, you know, a new class of product that we're probably going to be seeing quite a lot more of in years to come. And yeah, thanks for your time. Thanks for coming onto the show to really get into the details with me. I really have learned quite a lot. Thank you.
Thanks, Patrick. Appreciate it.
That was Stefan Chenette there. He is the chief executive and co-founder of Attack IQ. If you are a vendor and you want to do one of these Soapbox podcasts, do get in touch. We've only got one more of these available for 2017, and that's next month's edition. So if you're interested in booking it, do get in touch via sales@risky.biz. You can, of course, check out Attack IQ at attackiq.com. I do hope you've enjoyed this Soapbox special. I'll be back in the weekly show tomorrow. Until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.